Hi there, my name's Tim Brownson and you're listening to the audiobook version of Don't Hesitate, Meditate, an introduction to meditation for beginners and skeptics. Now before I get into the book, I just want to say that at the moment I am not in a professional sound studio. You may probably aren't amazed to know I'm actually in my office and I've got a sleeping Doberman to one side of me and another one on the loose somewhere. So it may be that there's the occasional noise or a car outside or whatever. And I kind of apologise, but you know, it's free. So I feel sure that you can suck it up. I am using my very expensive microphone. So anyway, so before I get into this, let me just go through the disclaimer and legal stuff. The book, this audio version is not copyrighted. If you want to forward it on, I'd be delighted for you to do so. In fact, you do anything with this or the book, as long as you don't claim that you wrote it, you know, that would be a little bit naughty. But anything else, you know, please feel free to forward it on. You know, the point of this is that we encourage more, I help encourage, and with your help as well, forwarding stuff on, people to meditate and lower their stress levels. But by the way, I should also say that even though meditation is, you know, very, very cool and it can do a lot of things that medication can do, please do not just decide to unilaterally quit any medication you're on and put everything into meditating. Whereas that in the long run may be a good idea, but you really do want to speak to your doctor first, so please do not do that. I do have a tendency to swear, you know, so if you're easily offended, you may want to stop listening now and go and pray for my soul, and I thank you for doing that. And if you're under 18, maybe it's best not to read at all. You know, most of the time I'm doing it for humour, I don't swear aggressively, so hopefully you'll be okay with that. And I may go off the cuff quite a bit. In fact, if you went and read the disclaimer and legal stuff on the actual book, you'd realise that I didn't read any of that. I just read it sort of, like I say, off the cuff even. I'd libbed it. And that's it. I'm not going to go back and edit this stuff. So it's all about the message. So let's get on with it. Introductions, April 2012. Let me make one thing clear, just in case you don't know me very well, just in case this has been sent to you or you've just seen a link and you've downloaded it, I am not a woo-woo kind of a guy, okay? Don't wear sandals in the winter, don't dream of unicorns and rainbows, and I don't subscribe to the belief that just because I'm a life coach, I should be happy all the time. In fact, to be honest with you, yesterday I had a really shit day. I was taking the dog for a walk and she jumped out the window of the car. Fortunately, we were stopped at the time, but she's just had a cruciate knee ligament operation. I was terrified that she was going to re-tear it. So, you know, I do have bad days. I do get stressed about stuff. We all do. And that's part of the reason for the book as well. You see, the reason I tell you this is because I want you to know that as few as maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I would have definitely found myself in the skeptical category when it came to meditation. You know, like a lot of people, I was aware of it, I'd heard of meditation, but on the whole, pretty ambivalent toward it. I thought it was really just something for hippies, Buddhists, and you know, people with too much time on their hands. Then in January 2007, I was at a workshop that was put on by my co-author of How to Be Rich and Happy, John Strelecki. John invited a number of guest speakers onto the platform to talk on different topics, and to be honest, I can't really tell you what any of them were about. My memory's a bit hazy. But I do remember one guy speaking about meditation. I don't think that was his main topic. I think he kind of segued into it, but he touched it enough to pique my interest. After the event, I sought out Patrick, that was his name, obviously, and asked him how he got into meditation and what benefits he had seen. I can still clearly remember his face lighting up and his enthusiasm for meditation and desire to talk about it, how it had changed his life. I'm not going to go into his personal details now because, needless to say, he'd been through a lot of tough times. And the guy really had, I didn't mention it in the book, but he'd been homeless at one point and, excuse me, all sorts of bad stuff. Anyway, when he was at rock bottom, somebody suggested he borrow their copy of Meditations for Manifesting by Wayne Dyer. Now, according to Patrick, that moment changed his life for the better. And after one listen to the CD, he felt happier, lighter, and most importantly of all, hopeful that the future wasn't as dark as he'd previously thought. Now, there was no doubt in my mind that he was being genuine. You could just tell by looking at him. You didn't need to be a life coach to be able to read body language. The guy was on a mission to spread the word about meditation and mindfulness. Even though I enjoyed talking with her, I was still less than 100% sold on the idea. It was interesting, but, you know, I wasn't really sure. But I did decide to buy the Wayne Dyer CD and give it a go for myself. In retrospect, I guess I must have not given it much thought whatsoever, as the clue is in the title of the CD, but it was more about the law of attraction, although Wayne Dyer never refers to the law of attraction per se. But it was more almost using the law of attraction to gain the life you desire, more than anything spiritual or even religious for that matter. And by the way, while we're on the subject of religion, let me make this abundantly clear. Meditation is not necessarily about religion. In fact, it's often not at all about religion. It really doesn't matter whether you're Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, Jewish, Hindu even, or even if you worship goats and sacrifice lambs on self-made altars or whatever. It doesn't matter. Well, it matters to the lambs, I guess, but so don't go sacrifice anything. Okay. But you can still employ meditation to help improve the quality of your life. A lot of the practices and books I referred to are Buddhist in nature, but that's purely because of what I've been exposed to, the books that people have recommended me, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, I'm not a Buddhist, and I'm not looking to convert you to Buddhism, or I should be saying Buddhism, really, for the Americans, but anyway, Buddhism or any other religion or philosophy, that matter. You know, do what feels right for you. This stuff is highly personal. Having said that, of course, meditation, it can be a spiritual practice if you wish it to be. It just doesn't have to be. So, the choice is yours. Anyway, back to the Wayne Dyer CD. Even though I was sceptical about manifestation, and I still am, really, I'm very sort of unsure about that, it was a great introduction to meditation. And I was chanting my own meditation merrily away every evening, much to the amusement of my wife and embarrassment of the dogs. After a few weeks of this, even though I found it relaxing, it started to get a tad repetitive, doing the same thing over and over again. So I started trawling around the internet looking for alternative methods and types of meditation. Needless to say, I found a lot. There is a lot of stuff out there on meditation. So for the next year or so, I experimented with different methods, which we'll get into later, until I found a few that worked for me. And that part is crucial, because not every method will resonate with you. I don't want you thinking that because the first practice you tried was torture to you, that they all will be, because they probably won't. I continued to meditate most days for about the next 3 years ago. And then something very weird, but also highly predictable happened. I stopped meditating. Not overnight, but over a period of about 6 months, it went from daily to weekly to almost never. I say it was weird because meditation definitely helped me feel chilled and aided my concentration levels. So why on earth would anybody quit something that was so beneficial and so free? And that's the predictable part, because I regularly see clients who do similar things. May not be meditation, it may be working out or eating healthily, but it's still quitting something that's obviously beneficial. And I say quitting, but I'm not totally sure how accurate that is, because that presupposes there's been a conscious decision made, and that's rarely the case. For me, it was more of a gradual tapering off. Take getting fit as an example. I've worked with numerous clients who have implemented a workout regime and started to see the benefits when something unexpected has derailed them. Often it can be something as simple as getting sick. All of a sudden, the routine is interrupted. Momentum's lost and it never gets picked up again because it's just too much trouble to start all over again. Now with me, it was something as bizarre as just getting busy with work. I've moved my meditation practice to mid-afternoon to save my wife's sanity. And as such, was finding it trickier and trickier to fit it in. There was always a client to see, a blog post to write, an ebook to compile. And, meditation gradually started to take a back seat. Then in the summer of 2011, I started to get stressed. I didn't know it at the time. In fact, if my wife and a close friend hadn't mentioned it to me, I'm not sure I'd have ever noticed it, and I'd have just slipped back into old patterns of behaviour. Sure, I had some health issues that had cost us quite a lot of money, as I had my wife, but business was good and I was doing a job I love, so, why should I be stressed or anxious? In retrospect, that's an easy question to answer. I was stressed because I built up a pattern of stress over a 25-year period prior to becoming a coach. Patterns of behaviour like that are incredibly difficult to remove completely. And the brain can't wait to introduce them back into your life if and when you drop your guard. And I definitely dropped my guard. It was around about that time I got a newsletter from Bodhipashka, the Buddhist teacher who runs wildmind.org. I noticed he was offering a weekly online meditation course, and I decided it was time to pick up the meditation gauntlet properly and stop dicking about at it, as I had been doing. Prior to then, my knowledge about meditation had come exclusively from audio programs and books, which is all well and good, but it's not the same as actually being guided by an expert and getting immediate feedback. You know, it's similar to the difference between buying a self-development book and hiring a life coach. The former, you know, it's cool to buy self-development books, and I buy dozens every year. But the latter is far more likely to help you make lasting change. You know, at the end of the day, a coach can offer feedback, a book can't. And it was similar to that. Although, yeah, I may be a tad biased. As I talk about this now, that was over 6 months ago. In fact, it's more like 8 months ago. And I'm still part of the same group that sits for 90 minutes together via the aid of Skype every week. Even though the original course was only supposed to run 6 weeks, we extended it, we did another 6 weeks, then we did a 12-week insight course and so on and so forth. And we just kept moving it forward. But let me be completely honest and say this. I am not even close to being an expert on meditation. Not even close. Okay, that may lead you to wonder, well, why the hell are you doing an audiobook on meditation then, you muppet? And yeah, and that'd be a legitimate question. And the answer is because I believe I know enough to help beginners or skeptics get up and running. I also believe I can help you appreciate the benefits of developing a regular meditation practice. This audiobook is a long way from being an authoritative guide. That's beyond my level of expertise. In any way, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble and whatever, there's thousands of them if you want to go and dig around there. This is just an easy-to-listen-to taster on the subject. It's going to be free from lingo. It's going to be free from dogma. And hopefully, you know, hopefully we can have a smile from time to time as well, which is, let's face it, that's what it's all about. We all want to smile and have a bit of a laugh. And the one thing I can promise you before we get into the book is if you do it and you start a regular meditation practice, you won't regret it. Now, that's a very huge sweeping statement, but I believe it with every part of my being. Ooh, God, I'm almost going to vomit at that, but I do. So stick with it. We're not going to go into detail. This is just an intro for you. Stick with it and let's move on to the book proper. What is meditation and why should I do it? This is such a difficult question because I've read enough to realise that authorities on the subject don't always totally agree. Therefore, trying to offer a definitive answer is leaving myself wide open to a host of emails from irate people who can't wait to tell me what a dick I am. And yeah, that does happen from time to time. Having said that, there's no real need to know what meditation is or definitively pin it down to enjoy the massive benefits it can offer. You know, any more than you really need to know that an internal combustion engine works to be able to drive your car. Having said that, it would be a bit remiss of me to skate past this question just because it's tricky. So I enlisted the help of Bodhipashka, my meditation teacher, and somebody who's been teaching, studying and writing on the topic for over a quarter of a century. The one sentence summary I'd used previously was one I'd heard and liked from the guy that taught me hypnotherapy several years ago. And he used to say that meditation is a concentrated form of focus. That short summary does indeed go some way to explain what meditation is, but it's a little bit misleading in one crucial area because meditation doesn't have to be this laser-like focus as that may suggest. It's very, very possible, as will become clear later on, to be meditating without focusing intently on any one thing, as long as you're being mindful and in the moment. And in that respect, the definition misses the mark and confuses people. So let me tell you what Bodhipashka. So I shot an email. I was struggling with this. I shot an email off to him and said, could he give me a one sentence sort of explanation of what meditation is? And he came back and he said, meditation is the acceptance of experience and the gentle effort to be continuously present with the experience. So let me read that again. Meditation is the acceptance of experience and the gentle effort to be continuously present with experience. Notice the latter part about being continuously present with experience. That can be summed up by the word mindful. Mindfulness is an expression that crops up again and again and again when reading about meditation. And many experts go as far to say that mindfulness is meditation, that the two are one and the same. Now, we were talking about this in our meditation group last week, and I asked this question, and a couple of people in the group said, yeah, mindfulness is meditation. Now, I have to be honest and say I struggle to accept that concept, because by definition, you are then saying that any activity that involves mindfulness is in effect a meditation, or that highly mindful people are almost in a permanent meditative state. And I kind of struggle to get my head around that. But, you know, who am I to argue? And does it really matter? I'm not sure that it does. And as I say, for our purposes, as long as you're on board with the belief that, for the most part, being mindful is good, fantastic. We'll leave it at that. You see, being mindful requires awareness and you to be present in the moment, which sounds easy, but it isn't, because your mind loves to take the easiest route possible. And all that staying in the moment malarkey can be hard work. I mean, have you ever found yourself reading a book and suddenly realised you're halfway down a page and you've no idea what the hell you just read? Well, that's the opposite of mindfulness. Could call it mindlessness, if you like, although it seems a tad harsh. The word mindless sort of conjures up all sorts of negative images. But have you ever been putting the milk back in the coffee cupboard? Or have you driven for 5 minutes and just thought, hang on, I just passed through a town. I can't even remember passing through it. Or cutting your thumb on a can of dog food because you're thinking about what your next blog post is going to be, like I did a couple of weeks ago. And that was because of a lack of mindfulness. My mind wasn't on the job. It wasn't on peeling the can lid back carefully when the can opener had done its cutting business. I was elsewhere. And the result was I slashed my thumb open and almost died a bloody death. Maybe not. Anyway, in such situations, your mind has defaulted to automatic pilot and your conscious mind is running the show. Now, in and of itself, that's not a bad thing because it conserves a lot of energy. But it also has a way of removing you from your own experience, and you're far more apt to make mistakes like I did with the dog food in that state of mind. I sometimes get asked whether goal setting, because it's future-oriented, can be done mindfully, and the answer is, yeah, of course it can. You know, as long as your mind is staying on task and working on setting the goals at hand and not wondering what the hell happened to that dude from high school who always smelled of wet socks, then you're being mindful. Equally, you can be thinking about the past mindfully as long as you're aware you're thinking about the past and your mind hasn't headed that way of its own volition while you're really supposed to be playing with the kids. And that's so important. You know, I know I've had clients that would be working while they were playing with the kids. You know, that it's just not, it's not on, to be quite frank. You know, if you have got kids, when you're with them, be mindful, be with them and not let your mind go in elsewhere. And this is something that meditation can help you with. Now, think of mindfulness as you being in charge of your mind rather than the usual vice versa. And you being aware what your mind's up to, and that will give you a clear understanding. So I'm sure you'd like to know what the upsides of meditation are, other than an increased ability to enjoy the present moment, right? Yeah, of course you do. Because without knowing why you should do it, you're probably not going to bother. Now, I did consider going into some detail, but after spending several hours researching information I'm about to share, there was just so many links, there was so much stuff, and it was going to take so long, and, you know, for free, but that's just really designed to encourage people. I just thought a lot of it was superfluous, you know, so I can summarize it with a few bullet points. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to give you the facts and what current science is indicating. What I mean by that is some of the research is really new and most of it's ongoing. You know, so I mean, really, it's only in the last 5 to 10 years that a lot of this research has been done. So when I say something like meditation is linked to reduction in coronary heart disease, for example, that just means that early studies have strongly indicated that to be the case. However, you know, more work needs to be done to ensure that we know unequivocally that it's the meditation that's helping that make the positive changes. And just as importantly, why it's doing it, which is some of the stuff we don't know as yet. Yeah, if you doubt any of what I mean, if you're the kind of person, you're a little bit of a doubter, if you doubt any of this stuff, then Google it. Just just go and check it on Google. You'll be able to find it. You know, there's loads of stuff, loads of research out there that you'll be able to find that supports what I'm going to say. If you're that inquisitive soul that you need to know, that's fine. You know, less than 50 years ago, there was little known in Western culture about the benefits of meditation. And what was known was really mostly anecdotal rather than based in scientific research. And things have changed massively in recent years, and as more and more scientific research has been undertaken to understand the effects mindfulness has on the human brain. The advent of fMRIs and PET scans, along with research on neuroplasticity, has given us a window into how the brain works that was previously unavailable. We now know the body can and does generate new brain cells and some brain cells as well. So brain cells, and to all intents and purposes, it's plastic and can rewire itself. That's why if you ever hear somebody say something like people can't change or a leopard never changes its spots, you can be confident in the knowledge they're talking out of their arse. In fact, tell them so. Tell them that I said that. And unless they're in charge of the leopard enclosure at London Zoo and we're being literal, in which case, you know, they could be right. Maybe leopards can't change their spots. I have no idea. I'm not a leopard expert. Anyway, so without further ado, here's a list of things that meditation can help you achieve with a little bit of patience and a little bit of commitment. Okay. Improves mental health and has been linked to a reduction in depression. Improves physical health, and recent research has suggested it may help reduce blood pressure in people with coronary heart disease, as I just mentioned a moment or two ago. Increases grey matter in the hippocampus, an area of the brain that's important for learning and memory. It lowers stress and anxiety levels. How surprising is that? Improves your ability to deal with stress and anxiety when it does arrive, or they do arrive. Improves cognitive function and concentration levels, and potentially problem-solving skills. Improves overall satisfaction with life. Improves happiness levels. And there's a strong link to length in life. There was one report that suggested the meditators, regular long-term meditators, may live as much as 10 years longer, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. I'm not on about 10 years longer, you know, dragging a colostomy bag around with you either. We're talking about 10 years longer of good health. Not a bad list, is it, when you think about it? So can you see the benefits of starting a regular meditation practice now? Or do none of those things sound attractive to you? You know, of course it takes a little bit of work to see those kind of benefits. Plonking your arse down once every couple of months on your bedroom floor and chanting on for 10 minutes probably won't achieve a fat lot other than maybe scaring your family. After all, you know, you wouldn't join a gym, go once, and expect to wake up the following day with a six-pack. You wouldn't bound into the bathroom, rip your gym jams off. I don't know if you call pajamas gym jams over here, but now you know what we call them in England. Rip your gym jams off and suddenly expect to see a six-pack. Well, meditation is not really any different. You don't get astounding results overnight. You have to persevere. But if you can't persevere for all of those benefits, and quite frankly, you may as well stop listening now, or you need to hire me, to be honest with you. You know, think of meditation as a workout for your brain and you're on the right track. Now, if everybody on the planet was taught to meditate and did so from early age, I'm pretty sure I'd be out of work because few people would have the sense of stuckness and disillusionment and stress that I specialise in helping people remove. You know, so it's fair to say that by encouraging you to meditate, I might be losing a potential client. But you know what? I can live with that. Because first of all, there's 7 billion people on this planet, and I only have a goal to get this to 5 billion, so there's still a couple of people wandering around that won't read it. But the sad reality is, I know most people won't bother. Or maybe they'll try it for a bit and then, you know, give up for any number of dubious reasons. You know, I know, and I nearly did that. I know that it can be difficult sometimes pushing through that initial, this is ridiculous phase. But I have pushed through it, and now I actually look forward to my sessions. I see meditation as a reset button, a chance to get away from everything and take valuable time out for myself. And by the way, we all need to take time out for ourselves from time to time, especially you. Common misunderstandings about meditation. You know, when I take a new client, the first thing I do is send them my intake forms to fill in so I can gather some background information. On one of the forms, I asked them to rate their satisfaction levels from 1 to 10 in 16 different areas of their life. Now, there's a good reason for doing this, and it's largely because even though a client may come to me with one issue, there may be other issues underpinning it they're unaware of. One of the areas I ask about is meditation, and it often provides a really fascinating conversation when we start working together. And the reason it's fascinating for me is because the conversation, unlike any other topic I ever discuss, follows almost always the same pattern. It goes like this. So I said, you have 5 down for meditation. What prompted you to score it like that? Client usually gets a quizzical look on their face. I'm not really sure what meditation is, so I just scored it in the middle. Okay, would you be interested to know more if it could help you lower your stress, make you happier, and improve your health? Client, yeah, probably, but I'm pretty sure I couldn't do it. Me, well, what makes you believe that? Client, well, I've got this brain that's going 1,000 miles per hour all the time and it never shuts up. Ah, really? Do you know something? I know exactly why that is. Client starting to look a bit interested. Really? Why? It's because you're a human being, you complete muppet. Okay, I'm being a bit flippant with the muppet bit, but the rest of it I'm being absolutely serious about. You know, the reason your mind's going 1,000,000 miles an hour is because you're a human. That's how it's wired up. It's wired up to be going all the time. You know, if you could climb inside my head, and don't, please, it's full to capacity, you'd notice that mine's going all the time too. The human brain is wired and trained to chatter away to itself. Now, although your brain is only 3% of your body weight, it uses, in the form of oxygen and glucose, about 25% of your energy supplies. It's a greedy bastard, let's be honest. Even when you're asleep, that amount doesn't drop measurably, and sometimes not at all, because your brain is still hard at work. It's making sure your heart is pumping, your blood pressure is being maintained, food is being digested, new cells are generated, and much more, also that you don't wake up dead. So if you're the kind of person who thinks you have a monkey brain that's out of control, cool, because you've come to the right place, and a regular meditation practice will help you calm it down. There are a number of common misconceptions when it comes to meditation, and I'm going to go through now the ones that I come across most often with clients. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the myth or the misconception, and I'll just explain a little bit about it. Okay, number one, if your mind isn't still, you're not meditating. Okay, I've been meditating for about 5 years now, a little bit longer, I'm guessing. In that time, I've never managed to shut my thoughts off for more than about 15 or 20 seconds in any one sitting. Pretty crappy for somebody that's been doing something 5 years. You know, apart from the fact that there are different types of meditation, many of which require visualization and thus involve the active engagement of the mind, meditation is a practice. Now, what's meant by that is you pretty much never master it. You just do your best each time you sit. Yeah, I'm sure there are a handful of people who get close to mastery. Maybe the Dalai Lama isn't there scratching his ass, I don't know. But my guess is that even expert meditators think that they can improve on their practice. I know Bodhi Pashka, my teacher, certainly believes that. And he regularly will report and say, oh, I've not had a good session today or whatever. And he's very honest about that. Now, your mind is active for many reasons, you know, a lot of which are due to basic primordial survival instincts. It's had millions of years of initially reptilian and then mammalian evolution to be all over the place on high alert for any potential danger. Your limbic system, the amygdala part of your brain, is constantly looking out for danger and will, you know, tip you the wink if it spots anything. Now, unfortunately, the threats that your brain spent hundreds of thousands of years evolving to be on the lookout for are by and large no longer a problem. Therefore, your brain starts looking for danger where none exists. It simply doesn't want to let go of the fact that for the most part, you're perfectly safe. You won't die giving that presentation, asking for a date, or opening that email from HR. On top of that, millions of people add fuel to the monkey brain fire by trying to multitask. This is a real pet peeve of me. I wrote a blog post. If you do a search in Google, multitasking is better for you. Sorry, cannabis is better for you than multitasking. You'll know my opinion on multitasking. So multitasking has been scientifically proven to be a total myth for all but about 2 to 2.5% of the population. And they're an elite group called supertaskers, and they're wired up slightly different to us. Yet still people try to do it. And what you're doing with multitasking is basically you're going backwards and forwards very, very quickly. It feels like you're doing two things at once, but you're really not. But you are training your mind to be even more scattered than was previously the case. Now, what you're doing with meditation is bucking the evolutionary trend. And ironically, bearing in mind what I just said, you're retraining your mind to be more effective for modern living. And that is the real irony of that, that meditators are actually more efficient, pretend to be more efficient people. So cut yourself some slack. And when you notice your brain has wandered off like an errant puppy, because that's what puppies and brains do, simply recognize what's happened. Don't scold or berate yourself. In fact, don't do that ever. That's life coaching tip 101. And then just start all over again. Okay? Number two, it's only really for sandal-wearing, tofu-eating, dolphin-hugging hippies like life coaches. I think this is the thing that puts so many people off. And to coin a quaint old English phrase, it's total and utter bollocks. If you knew how many successful CEOs, sports people, celebrities, and quote-unquote ordinary people meditated, you'd be really shocked. It's a lot. A better and more accurate way of putting that would be, it's only for people who want to be happier, healthier, and more content with their lives, and also wish to live longer. Would you like some of that? Or would you rather spend another hour playing Angry Birds or dicking about on Facebook? If you take anything away from this book, and I hope you'll take a lot away from it, but if you take anything away, please drop the idea that meditation is anything other than mainstream and people that meditate are weird. Because the reality of the situation is it's not weird to engage in a process that is free and offers as many upsides as meditation does. However, it is very weird to think people who meditate are weird when you know all the potential even benefits, and you do. Number three, you need to sit upright with your legs wrapped around each other like a contortionist. You know, I can't get into the lotus position. I'm 49, nudging 50. Groan, that really sucks. But anyway, I also rarely meditate on the floor with my legs crossed, and that's because I have knee and back issues that sometimes can really be a pain, really literally a pain, and make it difficult for me, not just while I'm meditating, but afterwards. So I adapt to my circumstances, and I adapt to my circumstances as well, if you'd rather use the correct word there. Yeah, and I may lie down, or usually I'll use a chair, although I have just recently bought a Zafu, which is Z-A-F-U, which is a meditation cushion, which is proving to be very helpful. I've only been using it a couple of weeks, but up to now, I am in favour of it, so that may be a way to go. Number four, a nap or hypnosis is just as good as meditating. No. You know, lovely and crucial though naps are, they'll not rewire your brain, whereas meditation can. Now, I'm a trained hypnotherapist, and hypnosis has a lot of very beneficial uses, but it has its limitations, and it can't offer the long-term benefits that meditation can. Hypnosis probably won't make you any happier or live longer, although I guess, you know, indirectly, I suppose it can, you know, help you be happier, and, you know, by removing fears and changing negative behaviours, etc. But it won't increase your concentration levels, or it won't make you a kinder or more content person. The main difference between sleeping and hypnosis and meditation is the latter is an active process and the former two are passive. So meditation is something you do, not something you let happen to you. Whereas the other two, like, you know, as I say, with hypnosis, you have that, you just lie there. You can be basically nodding off during hypnosis and it will still have the desired effect. And if you're interested, I did write a post called What is Hypnosis? If you go to the site and just go into the hypnosis tab, you will find it there. It's quite a long post, isn't it, needless to say. Number five, you need to meditate for years before you can see any benefit. You know, I'd say all of the clients who've adopted meditation while I've been working with them, I guess 75% or maybe even more have seen immediate or close to immediate effects. Research led by John Cabot Zinn, who founded the mindfulness-based stress reduction program at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center, supports the belief that results can happen very quickly for many people. And that's something actually I've read since I wrote the book, that there's a stronger belief now that results can happen much more quickly. You know, it's possible to see benefits in lowering stress levels, increasing mood, and improving concentration levels quickly, you know, which is why sensible and forward-thinking doctors would advise it, you know, to people suffering from depression. But, you know, as well as regular exercise as well. You know, meditation and exercise are such great stress busters and great depression lifters that, you know, presuming there isn't something sort of chemical going on, that it just absolutely, I find it flabbergasting that doctors don't prescribe it first before they jump to a pharmaceutical intervention, which seems to be the way to go. Anyway, so yeah, you don't need to do it for years, basically is what I'm saying. The benefits are cumulative, a lot like exercise. So the longer you do it, the greater the return. Number six, meditation is a spiritual practice. Okay, I touched on this at the beginning. Of course it can be a spiritual practice, and for millions it is, probably hundreds of millions. But it doesn't have to be. And you can just do it for the huge health and all-round benefits for yourself if you like. You know, if you are devoutly religious, and that's, you know, I have no problem with that whatsoever. But if you think you're, by meditating, you're being drawn to the dark side, just adapt a mantra meditation using a short prayer to the god or goddess of your choice. That way is everybody happy. So you can actually take a prayer and you very short one and use that as a meditation. In fact, there is a strong correlation now between prayer and meditation, that the two have similar beneficial effects. Number seven, you need to do it for at least 30 minutes a day to see any benefit. 10 minutes a day is better than nothing, so don't stress that you don't have time. As I said before, meditation is cumulative and builds up over time, a lot like stress does, only meditation won't kill you. Think of a 10-minute midday meditation as being a better alternative than having to go to see your doctor because your blood pressure is through the roof and you can't sleep. Bodhipashka from Wild Mind, who I've already mentioned two or three times, he's produced a CD of guided meditations called Meditations for Busy People. And guess what? They're all 10 minutes or less. If you've got the ebook, you can see in the research, there's some links to that stuff at the back. So anyway, you don't need to do it 30 minutes. That would be cool if you can, but you don't have to. So if you can't, don't stress it. Just try and build it up over time, maybe. Number eight, I fidget too much and it would never work for me. You know, my guess is you're not a worse or better, depending on your point of view, fidgeter than I am. I have a report card from school that highlights my world-class fidgeting abilities. When I first started meditating, I'd barely go 2 minutes without having to scratch some itch, adjust my posture, turn the heating on, turn the heating off, tell the dogs to shut up, etc. But that was then and this is now. And even though I still like, you know, I like a good fidget in my spare time, I've had a few scratches while I've been reading this book. But I regularly complete a 30-minute sit without doing any of the above. Of course, you know, there's exceptions. And sometimes a really intense itch or bad back pain can force me to scratch or adjust. But, you know, on the whole, I'm much better at dealing with the distractions. And the reason I'm better is that I've trained my mind to ignore them. Or if they can't be ignored, focus in on them. The strange thing is, you know, when you really narrow your focus in some area of discomfort, you notice all sorts of weird and wonderful things going on. Firstly, you notice that nothing stays still. An itch isn't actually a steady sensation, and neither is pain. Nerves become desensitized if activated for any length of time, and they just go numb. Therefore, you start to notice the subtle movements of the sucker that's irritating you. That, in and of itself, can reduce the annoyance because you've shifted yourself into a state of curiosity and fascination rather than annoyance and irritation. More than that, though, you start to realise that the sensations don't last anywhere as long as you think they do, that all feelings are arising and diminishing. You start focusing on any particular nasty itch in your ear, and just as you're doing so, it fades and then disappears completely. I was advised by Bodhipashka that by focusing on discomfort, it is just as much a part of my meditation practice as the rest of it is. You know, whereas previously I thought an itch needed to be scratched so I could get on with the meditation properly. Now I realise that it was just sent to help me. And that scratching it is actually breaking the meditation. It's not helping me get on with it. Number 9, I'd feel silly. Lame, lame, and thrice I say lame. It's not as silly as lying in a hospital bed because you've just had a heart attack brought on by intense and cumulative stress, is it? You know, nobody's asking you to shave your head, don a saffron robe and sit in your front yard, cross-legged, chanting and on meditation as people drive home from work. I mean, you can if you want to, but you don't need to. You know, if you feel self-conscious, do it at home or go somewhere where nobody will see you. You know, if your family members that will laugh at you or ridicule you, refer them back to the massive benefits of meditation. If they continue to mock you, just put an ad on Craigslist for a new family. Or better still, smile serenely, all Dalai Lama-like and knowingly at them and just maybe give them a wink. It'll just piss them off no end because they don't understand what's happening. Number 10, it's boring. This, you know, it's the irony with this one is the more boring you find meditation, the more you'll benefit from it in the long run. You're bored because your mind's on a mission to make you bored and it wants instant stimulation or gratification. Because guess what? Yes, that's what you've trained it to want. So put down the crack pipe and light the incense instead and just, I think I'm going to use that word that I don't use very often or that expression now. If you think it's boring, just suck it up. Setting up your meditation to listen or not to listen, that is the question. If you see pictures of Tibetan monks meditating, you don't usually see them wearing headphones attached to an iPhone. But you're probably not a Tibetan monk. So to begin with, I suggest you enlist the help of meditation CDs or MP3 downloads to make life easier. Some people like to meditate to super chilled out music, specifically written for the purpose. And there's a number of people that just write that kind of music. You know, other people prefer spoken guided meditations just with a voice only. And yet others like a combination of the two with a soothing voice backed by music or calming sound effects from nature. My preference is really dictated by my mood, although voice only is probably the option I use most frequently. I like them all, depending on, you know, the circumstances. And I also like just meditating in complete silence on the occasion when I'm feeling really brave. And to be honest, you know, that advisably is the thing that you want to be aiming for, because when you sit without any sort of other distractions, it really does, that's when it forces you to really be mindful. So, but you know, like I say, let's make the start of this as easy as we can, so ease yourself into it. So you may be thinking, well, when and where should I meditate? Now again, you know, there's no hard and fast rule with this. Many people like to meditate first thing in the morning when they're most alert. Quite honestly, I'm not at my most alert first thing in the morning. So I nearly always meditate in the afternoon or in the evening. But do what works for you, because as I just said, there is no hard and fast rule. There's no meditation police. They're going to come and kick down your door and give you a damn good thrashing because you're meditating at the wrong time of the day. But having said that, we are looking to build up a routine. So if you can, try and stick with the same time each day, at least to begin with. Then over time, it starts to create a habit. In terms of the best places to meditate, again, it's very much a personal preference, although it's probably, and very probably best not to use your bedroom. The reason for that is your bedroom really should only be for sleep and rumpy-pumpy. Do you have rumpy-pumpy in America, if you're listening in America? I don't know. Maybe it's just a UK phrase, but I'm sure we both know what I'm talking about, don't we? And by the way, no, I didn't forget about watching TV, because that's about the worst thing you can do in bed unless you want raging insomnia or nightmares or both. Just, you know, TV stimulates your brain, and the last thing you want to do before going to sleep is stimulate your brain, obviously. As meditation can make you much more alert, it may not be wise to train your brain to thinking that sitting on the bed means being wide awake, because that could have long-term negative effects on your sleeping patterns. You know, in all honesty, it probably won't for most people. But there's not much point taking the chance unless you literally have no other option. But definitely don't use your bed if you already struggle with getting enough sleep. Now, if you have a spare room that isn't used for anything except storing clutter, then that's ideal, because you can set everything up just as you like it. Eventually, you will build up an anchor, which is a conditioned response. And merely walking into the room will make you all peaceful, serene, and majestic. Now, I put in the book here, probably. I'd actually say that's a bit more than probably. There's a good chance, I'm being absolutely serious here, you can make the room where you meditate act like an anchor, so that you're just so used to going in there and being chilled that just going in there on its own, as long as you don't overdo it, keep nipping every 10 minutes, it almost certainly will start to have a calming effect on you. That's why when people walk into churches and other sorts of buildings like that, where they can suddenly feel a sense of calm and ease. They could also say it's because God's there. I have no idea, but I think we know what we're talking about. Now, some people really like to go to town with their meditation space, set up pillows and light candles and incense, and have assorted statues of Buddha, Shiva, Vishnu, and etc., etc. They were the only ones I could think of. I put etc. in the book, but I couldn't think of any other sort of people to have statues of, to be quite honest with you. But anyway, I'm rambling. Hey, it's down to your preference. My only advice would be do what works best for you. If you think this sounds a bit woo-woo, ignore it. Because by and large, I do. Although I've got a small Buddha statue overlooking my time. He seems to be saying, go on, Tim, kick some ass with that meditation book. But, I guess that could be just my over-imagination. As I said before, one change I've made since started writing the book is to buy a proper Zafu, a meditation cushion. And it is useful. You can also get meditation mats called Zabutons. I think I've pronounced that correctly. I could be wrong. Don't email me to tell me. It's Zabutons. If you're wanting to look all regal and professional, you can buy a meditation bench. Although I am told these are fairly expensive and you need to make sure it's right for you and to get the right height, etc. So buying one online may be a bit risky, because even if you can send it back, even if you get it from somewhere like Amazon, you've still got the shipping charges, etc. So maybe you want to go into a meditation shop if there is one near you, or a meditation store if you're in the US. Because you want to be as comfortable as you can. But, meditation isn't an endurance test. Actually, interestingly enough, just going off topic a minute, I was just reading a book by Jack Kornfield, not to be confused with Jack Canfield, who was in The Secret. Jack Kornfield's a Buddhist teacher, and he's doing a book called Bringing the Dharma Home, his latest book, or his latest book was Bringing the Dharma Home. And he talks about what he went through as a young monk and the training. And fuck, that was torture. That was an endurance test. Some of the stuff they went through, like sitting in the forest for 3 days, freezing the night and burning up in the day, sounded pretty horrific to me. I don't want you to go through that. Unless you want to. If that's your kind of thing, then, go for it. But remember this, if you normally slouch like I do, and I'm off to the chiropractor tomorrow because I'm slouching all the time, it might be a tad painful to begin with, because you're going to be asking muscles to work that normally take the day off. But don't worry, the initial pain it'll almost certainly wear off after a few days, because your back will just get stronger. So, yet another positive reason to meditate. You improve your posture and strengthen your back muscles. Come on, this really is the gift that keeps giving, isn't it? Yeah, thank me later. Getting ready to meditate. Okay, so setting up your session is important because, as I said, you want to be relaxed and comfortable as possible without the risk of nodding off. Very few people can comfortably adopt the lotus or even half lotus position. You're traditionally seeing pictures of people meditating, or at least if they can do it, it's difficult for them to hold it for any length of time. If you can't, and I can't, well, don't stress yourself. It really isn't that important unless you want it to be. And if you want it to be, probably take up yoga, because that'll definitely help. Yoga's great for improving flexibility. And most yoga sessions that I've ever done, most yoga classes that I've ever done, also end up with a short meditation. So yoga is a great way to get into this. And that's it, really. So sitting cross-legged and upright on the floor, like you used to at school, that's fine. You may want to wait before you commit to buying a Zafo. So just drop a cushion under your bum so it doesn't go to sleep. It's fine to lie down and use a chair if you prefer, as long as you're not likely to fall asleep. Are you one of those people that gets to the gym and immediately hops on the treadmill or other cardiovascular device without properly warming up? I used to do that. And still do, long after knowing the benefits of warming up. I got to the gym, I was always in a hurry to to leave. I never enjoyed the gym. I've been a gym regular for 20 years. You know, I say to people that the most beautiful drive in the world ever is always the one home from the gym. I could be going past a lead smelting factory. It would still be gorgeous because I was on my way home. But anyway, so I had a tendency just to get in and get out. And I used to be the same with meditation, except that with meditation, I had no idea there was any benefit to warm me up. I didn't even know it existed. So I just, you know, sit myself down and dive into whatever practice I decided on for that day. Now, looking back, there's a certain sense of irony that I was impatient to get going with my meditation. And that's just reminding me of something that happened to me a couple of years ago at the gym, remarkably enough. So I was on the cross trainer or the elliptical, and in front of me was a guy who was on a stationary bike, one of the low bikes. He got the TV switched on, and he also had his headphones plugged into his phone. So the TV was on, but he was obviously listening to something on his phone as well at the same time. Now, if that wasn't enough, he was also reading a book. Now, in and of itself, that's kind of funny. You know, you can't listen to something, watch TV and read a book all at the same time. You know, it's physiologically impossible. But it got way better than that. So when I got off the machine and walked around and in front of the guy, I could see which book he was reading. I swear to God, this is true. I swear this is true. Have a guess. What do you think the book was he was reading? No? Any ideas? It was The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. Now, you know, it's probably one of the most well-known books ever written on mindfulness. But just in case you didn't know, it's just a seminal book on being mindful. You know, so I'm not quite sure the guy had grasped the message that Eckhart Tolle was trying to deliver, because he was not really being mindful, trying to do four things at once. Anyway, as I was saying, setting up your brain for meditating may not be crucial, but it can be beneficial to your practice. One of the ways to do this is utilising something that Body Pascal calls a perceptual stretch. All you do is adopt your meditation posture, close your eyes, and start to listen to every sound you can hear. Tune into any sounds outside of the building you're in. Maybe you can hear traffic or birds singing. In my cases, it's usually Dobermans barking. Don't judge the sound as good or bad, just focus on it. Then focus in on the next sound whilst retaining awareness of the first. Keep pushing outwards and introducing as many sounds as possible. You can even then start to introduce the sense of space you can feel with your eyes closed. And even start to notice the light through your eyelids and feel your clothing or the air on your skin. Feel yourself expanding to feel every corner of your room with awareness. Don't worry that this sounds a bit weird. It's just me and you. We can do weird. But by setting up like this, you're starting the process of quieting your mind before you go into the meditation. Until relatively recently, it was believed that the human brain could process between 5 and 9 pieces of information at the conscious level at any one time. In fact, I actually used that research in How to Be Rich and Happy, which galls me because not long after the book came out, I read some new research that says that now it's 4's pushing it. So what's happening when you're setting up like this, as you add a component, you start to use up mental bandwidth until your mind's forced to stop thinking and start being. Now, of course, this is easier said than done, and thoughts will start creeping back in, or as you add one sound, you'll forget about the other one or take your focus, but that's okay. Just carry on, just keep reconnecting, and you'll be fine. Basic meditation techniques. Now that you know a bit more about meditation, let's take a look at a few basic techniques. Yeah, I must point out before I do that, however, I'm not going to distinguish between the different types of meditation. There will be some crossover because I'm presuming you're reading this and interested in meditation more for the mental and physical health benefits and because you want to start a spiritual practice and are unsure of which path to follow. You know, if you want to get a better understanding of meditation and the differences, then I suggest you check out the resources at the end of the ebook, because it's really, you know, I'm just touching the tip of the iceberg with this stuff, and there's so much, and I could overwhelm you with information. And not only that, I'd be giving you information that I don't fully understand myself yet. And like I said at the beginning, that's not really the point of this audiobook. So we're going to look at some basic techniques, so irrespective of where they come from. Okay, so the first one is the breath meditation. You know, this is probably the meditation that people are most familiar with. It's also the one that has people quitting most quickly because it's just too hard. And, you know, I say that's in my experience. That's purely anecdotal from what clients tell me. You know, I really, I've never done any research on why people could quit meditation. So it's just a guess. But what happens is they sit down, they focus on their breath, and then they wonder where the hell did all those thoughts come from. So they really focus on the breath. A load more thoughts appear as if by magic. At this point, they often freak out. They presume the mental, start to get agitated, that they haven't managed to shut the mind off. You know, short of a frontal lobotomy, nobody shuts their thoughts off that quickly. It's nigh on impossible. You know, think what we're talking about before, about years and, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of years of evolution. That's what we're trying to, you know, book the trend with here. You know, even now, if I go 10 seconds without a thought, I'm metaphorically pumping the air with joy. And I often have a conversation in shoes like this inside my head. Yes, just went 10 seconds without a thought. Woohoo, baby. Wait a minute, that was a thought. You bloody idiot. Damn. Okay, let's reconnect. No, stop telling yourself to reconnect because that's a thought. Just do it. Okay, all right. I'm willing to do it right this instant. Is that a birdie I can hear? Shut up, just shut up. No, you fucking shut up, sunshine. I'll give you a good hiding. Okay, you make a good point. Does that sound normal to you? Well, no, probably not. But it's normal for me. You know, as long as at some point I snap myself out of my ridiculous internal dialogue and reconnect with my breathing, it's okay. It's all part of the process. Remember, It's a practice. Do not, under any circumstances, give yourself a hard time, because that's the antithesis of meditation. It's the antithesis of what we're trying to achieve here. You know, seriously, this is my mantra. If I had a spiritual mantra, it would be kind to yourself. It's one of the first things I want to drive home with clients. You've got to be kind to yourself. Okay. This is where guided meditations, with the breath meditation, can be so useful because they remind you of what you're doing and to keep reconnecting with the breath. On the other hand, it can occasionally be irritating. Things are going remarkably well and you're sat there and you're connected with your breath and suddenly a voice says, concentrate on your breathing. You think, oh, fuck, what's concentrating on my breathing? Now you've just snapped me out of my reverie. But, you know, sometimes that's rare, to be quite honest, and they are useful. You see, in essence, with a breath meditation, you are literally shifting all your conscious awareness, or as much as you can, onto following your breathing and allowing your mind to calm down. A really useful technique that Body Pasca uses on his brilliant CD called, amazingly enough, Guided Meditations, to help ease you into the meditation by calming your mind is this. Okay, so focus, but not too intently, on an imaginary spot on a wall in front of you with your eyes open. Start to notice the whole expanse of your vision, especially the periphery. The more information you take in, the more of that mental bandwidth you use up, and less there is for thinking. You know, remember what we were talking about before, you can only deal with about four things, so you start to absorb more information. Then using your sense of space and sound, start to imagine that you can see that your sight is stretching behind you and you can see 360 degrees. And as you do that, you'll start to notice your thinking quieting down. Look, I know you can't see 360 degrees. You don't have to fly. Can flies? I don't even know if flies can. I think they can. But anyway, but you're not a fly, see, and you can't do it. But that's fine. Just pretend you can. And as you do that, allow your eyes to slowly close and then shift your concentration onto your breathing. It's a little bit like, you know, we talked about the perceptual stretch before. It's similar to that. It's getting you ready before you just dive straight into it. I'm going to borrow another technique from Body Pasca's meditation because it's very similar to a couple of others I've listened to, and it involves counting your breaths to help you retain focus. You can count at the end of each out-breath until you reach the number of 10. And then you start all again. So you breathe in, you breathe out, and you go one. In, out, two. Okay, you keep doing that until you get to 10. And you maybe do that, depending on how long your meditation is going to go on for, maybe you do that for 5 minutes. And then what you do is you shift. and you put the number at the beginning of the in-breath. Now, I know the beginning of the in-breath and the end of the out-breath are more or less together, but we're just you know, changing things up a tad here. And then you do it for a similar time. And by counting, because you're having to concentrate on the counting as well as the breathing, it's very helpful at keeping you on task. You can intensify the process by shifting your focus to where the breath first enters and leaves the body. Now, you would expect, when I first read about this and tried this, you'd expect that it's the same for everybody. But it's not the case. Some people notice the breath as it hits their upper lip and feel it just going in past the upper lip. Other people, it may be the rims of the nostrils, and others, it's not until it's in the nasal passages. Wherever it is for you, that's where you concentrate your focus. And you keep returning to that point over and over until your mind starts to quiet down. And eventually it will do. A number of people, when I asked if my newsletter readers wanted me to do this audiobook, a number of people, I think, got the wrong end of the stick and suggested that, or thought I was going to do a guided meditation. And I did think about doing that. And I probably could deliver one. But I suspect I'd start slipping into hypnotherapy type speaking. It's not the same. And also, there's just so many people that do this really well. You know, so I say that I'm a hypnotherapist, but if you phone me up and said, Tim, I want hypnotherapy, there's a guy just down the road from me called Michael Watson who's a far better hypnotherapist than me. I don't do hypnotherapy per se anymore. I just use it for the language and for the other stuff that I'm not going to go in now. So really, you know, I could do that and I could put a free meditation up, but there's loads of free meditation downloads. There's things like there's ones on YouTube that you can just listen to from YouTube, or you could get some of that naughty software that rips audios from YouTube, but that would be illegal, so please don't do that. I never suggested that at all. Anyway, let's move along. The Metta Bhavana, or loving kindness meditation. The point of this meditation is to cultivate loving kindness, which in turn will make you a happier person, guaranteed, or your money back from the Buddha himself. There's usually five stages to the Metta Bhavana or loving kindness meditation. They're as follows. Firstly, giving loving kindness to yourself. Then giving loving kindness to a close friend. Then giving loving kindness to somebody you know but have no strong opinion on. Then giving loving kindness to somebody that you feel ill will toward. And then loving kindness to all four people together equally at the same time. There are some versions that do add a sixth stage, which is to add loving kindness to a benefactor, you know. If you want to throw that in as well, if you've got a benefactor lurking around that you want to give loving kindness to, then be my guest and go for it. So once you're set up and you've done all your perceptual stretch and whatever you want to do, and you're fully relaxed but also alert, visualize yourself looking well and happy. You know, this goes back to what we were saying before about some meditations using visualization. So you want to visualize yourself looking well and happy and say something like similar to the following. May I be well, may I be happy, may I be free from suffering. Now, you're saying this inside. You don't need to chant this outside. There's no necessity for that. And you repeat that over and over, and you create a mantra-like effect, which quiets your mind and allows you to focus and giving love to your beautiful self, because we both know you deserve it, you sexy beast, you. If you're a gentleman listening to this now, I do apologise for that. I wasn't being suggestive. Well, I was being suggestive. No, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. Anyway, moving on. You may find it feels weird or you want to resist giving love to yourself. But guess what? Tough. That just means you need to do it even more. So suck it up. Okay. I can't tell you how many clients I've worked with who were appalled at giving love to themselves. I'm not just talking about this meditation either. It goes back to what I was saying a few moments about being kind. They just don't want to be kind to themselves. You're the most important person in the world to you. And it's about time you appreciated that. I don't care if you've got kids, you're still the most important person with you, because without you, your universe ceases to exist. So give yourself some love, okay? Loving yourself is not self-centered, it's not egotistical, and it's not arrogant. It's merely what you deserve. It's a basic human right as far as I'm concerned. It also sets a great example to your kids, if you've got any. Unless that is you want them to grow up unable to love themselves as well. Huh? I suggest you don't. Okay, so be kind to yourself. So after you've done that for 5 or 10 minutes, however suits you, because we've got whatever time it is, you're going to times it by five, because we've got five stages. Then visualize a close friend who means a lot to you. Make sure it's not somebody you're lusting after. We just want to keep this good, clean fun. This is a meditation, okay. And then when you visualize your friend looking well and happy, repeat the following to yourself. May you be well. May you be happy. May you be free from suffering. And do it for a similar time that you did for yourself. Okay. Then we're going to move on to somebody you know but you have no real opinion about. Could be a neighbour you know a little about, a store assistant who regularly serves you, you know, just a random person you see on a regular basis. For me, this tends to be two people. There's a woman that serves me at the post office when I'm taking books to be mailed off, and there's a woman that often serves me at my supermarket. And I often wonder, do they know how many times I've been giving them love inside my own head? Probably not. They'd probably be a bit freaked out. But anyway, so you do the same thing. You say, may you be well. May you be happy. May you be free from suffering. Then you want to think of somebody you actively dislike. The thought of makes you feel uncomfortable. Now, it's preferably somebody you know personally, because that means you're really stretching yourself. And you may find that you struggle or resist giving love to somebody you actually dislike. But guess what? Tough. That just means you need to do it even more. So suck it up. Okay. And I'm serious on this. You know, it really is important. You know, that you're not condoning their behaviour if they've wronged you or whatever. You're just being the bigger person. Anyway, so in the final part, what you do is you bring all four people back. So you've got yourself, you see yourself, your friend, the neutral person, the person you have difficulty with or you just strongly dislike. And it's, may we be well, may we be happy, may we be free from suffering. After doing all five parts for similar lengths of time, you can then let go of the image of the people and instead start to imagine giving yourself to love to everybody on the planet. And I do mean everybody, even that bastard that stole my golf clubs a few weeks ago. Broad daylight, took him out of my garage, should I say. How sickening is that? But anyway, I'm still sending him some love. It could be her, I guess, but I suspect not. It can be tough for people to do this meditation for pretty obvious reasons. Giving love to themselves and loving to love to people they don't dislike. But don't be one of them. It's a cool meditation. And there is some research suggesting that this is one of the main meditations used by the Jon Kabat-Zinn at the university for helping people with depression. It's definitely one that's, there are strong links towards making people happier. You know, I do get if you think it's, you know, that it's going to be awkward, but, you know, push through it. It really is worth it. If you've got any doubts, think about this. What have the following people got in common? Okay. The Dalai Lama, Nelson Mandela, Jesus Christ, and Mahatma Gandhi. Okay? Yeah, they all offered love and forgiveness to their enemies. Now, are any of those seem weird, weak, or wacky? Yeah, maybe by a few cynical people, but on the whole, I think they're amongst the most respected people to ever lived on the planet. Now, the Dalai Lama, if he can forgive the people who stole his country, forgive the Chinese and for exiling him, he hasn't been back to his country of his birth for, I have no idea how long it is, a long time. And if Mandela can forgive his jailers, do you know with Mandela, they used to have to change his jailers on a regular basis because they always became his friends, because he offered them kindness. Now, he was on Robben Island for, I'm going from memory now, 27 years, was it? And he was still friendly and still kind to his jailers. Or what about Jesus forgiving his executioners? Doesn't matter what your religion is, doesn't really matter. You know, but was that seen as weak? And Gandhi, I mean, he put up with the evil British Empire acting like complete arses and occupying his country. Now, if they can all do that, I'm sure you can, you know, forgive the dick at work who stole your great idea and passed it off to management at his own. You really can. And, you know, I am joking around a lot, but this is really, really important because, you know, by forgiving somebody, offering them your love, you're not condoning or encouraging their behaviour. You're just rising above it. And that's because you're so cool. Yes, you are. You know, in my not-so-humble opinion, we're either all worthy of being loved or none of us are. You know, and I may be a little bit naive, but I prefer to think it's that. Next up, we're going to talk about the walking meditation. Now, as far as I'm concerned, we could have called this the shower meditation, the emptying the dishwasher meditation, or the hopping around the house, stark bollock naked on one foot covered in syrup meditation, because it's all about being mindful. And this goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, and what I was talking about at the beginning, about the, some people say meditation and mindfulness are the same thing. And this is a great example of where this definitely is the case. You know, so the walking meditation is you go for a walk, you don't think about work, you don't think about home, you don't think about hiring a life coach, you don't think about why your colleagues are crazy bitch from hell. You think about the walk. Think about each footstep, rinse and repeat. Be mindful with every step you make and every breath you take. That was fantastic, wasn't it? That was Sting, that was, from The Police. Anyway, yeah, so it's basically it's being in the moment. Leave the past where it belongs, in the past, and the future's none of your damn business. I'll leave that alone too. The reason why I went for the walking meditation rather than calling it the hopping around the house naked is because there are plenty of walking meditations that you can download or CDs that you can buy, etc. So it's quite a common meditation used in insight meditation. So I try and do something similar to this in the shower in the morning when I remember. I don't always, you know, I slip back sometimes. But, you know, most people think of the shower as a place to go while they think about what they're going to do next. Okay. But few people actually concentrate on the shower, which is a shame when you think about it, because showers are nice. Now imagine, I wrote a story in the second person that was actually used in How to Be Rich and Happy about somebody falling down and being trapped down a mineshaft and thinking they were going to die. And eventually when they got home that evening, they had a shower and they realized how amazing showers are. Hot, soapy, warm water, hot and warm. There you go. So that's how amazing they are. Running down, you know. So I'm not going to go anywhere further with that. But basically, what I do is this: I get in the shower, and I concentrate all my attention on just one sense. So if it's the feeling of the water, then it's shifting my attention to my external, my body. So I feel the water, on my back and on my arms, and the soap going down my legs, etc. What have you. And then I may shift to shutting that off and just trying to listen. And, you know, it's really weird when you listen to a shower when you try and close off all your other senses, because there's so much stuff going on, drips, different kinds of drips, just like there are little puppy dog tapping in behind me, which she probably didn't even hear and I didn't need to mention. But anyway, she's settling down now. Next up, we've got the chakra meditation. Now, according to Hindu tradition, there are seven main chakras or energy centers that run up the core of your body. And if from bottom up, there's the base chakra, which is red and is called LUM, although it's written LAM, L-A-M. Pelvic or sacral chakra, which is orange and called VUM. And again, it's spelt with an A, they all are, so I won't bore you with that. And then there's the solar plexus chakra, RUM. The heart chakra, YUM. The throat chakra, which is pale blue, HUM. The third eye chakra, which is indigo, shum. And then the crown chakra, which is right at the top of your head, that's om. See, I knew I'd get an om in there somewhere. I have a really cool Deepak Chopra CD called Chakra Balancing that I sometimes use for meditation. And I love it because the background music is really trippy and trancey. And Chopra does a great job of explaining each stage. In fact, so much so that now I find it difficult to listen to his audiobooks because I've associated him with doing guided meditations. I just want to, you know, drift into a meditative state. This is a mantra meditation. I mentioned these before because you're repeating the Hindu name for each chakra over and over whilst imagining breathing in the associated colour. Okay. I know we can't breathe in colours, we're just pretending, you know, so don't get too wrapped up in that, okay. So you're focusing on your attention on a particular part of the body related to that chakra. As you're chanting and as you imagine breathing in this colour, which is another cunning way to shut off Mr. or Mrs. Mind. Bit of a sort of theme going on here, isn't there? Anyway, that is a great CD. If you've got the ebook version, there's a link to it in the back, and I would earn a massive amount of probably about 60 cents if you went and bought it, so please do, because, you know, that make all the difference to me in my life, but worth checking out definitely. Next up, we've got the body scan meditation. This is very similar to me to something called the Jacobson Method of Progressive Relaxation, which is something I learned when I was studying for my stress management diploma way back in 2004. But nevertheless, it's still a very useful meditation. My caveat with it, I do use it a lot. My caveat with it is it's probably a meditation that's very easy to fall asleep to, so definitely not one that I would necessarily do lying down, although I do have a recording of this where it suggests you do lie down. But again, that, you know, it's whatever works for you. I'm pretty sure just from the title you can get an idea of what it is, but I'll just run through it for you. So once you've set yourself up, as we spoke about before, and you've done a few deep diaphragmatic breaths with slow, long exhales, shift your attention to the soles of your feet. Notice how they feel and where any tension may be. And then allow all the muscles, send a signal for the muscles just to relax and soften. Keep your attention there for a few moments before slowly and carefully, or should I say slowly and mindfully, shifting your attention to the top of your feet and repeating the process. Continue to move up your body, allowing all your muscles to relax and go limp. Slight contradiction now, I realise, because obviously you're wanting to stay aware, so you're not wanting to actually slump, so you do want to keep your spine straight as you would in any meditation. But also, as you move up your body, even do this with your heart. Now, your heart is a muscle, and although you probably can't feel it relaxing, I'm not even sure that it's possible, so there's an element of, you know, being metaphorical about this, but certainly send the message to your heart, allowing it to relax. A bit woo-woo? Yeah, maybe, but do it anyway. What you got to lose? It's not going to stop, trust me. And if it does, don't sue me, although you won't be able to because you'll be dead. So leave a note to your family not to sue me. Okay. And then, like I said, work your way through the entire body. Really, you can go at whatever speed you want. And then when you get to the top, when you go into the crown of your head, just scan the body very quickly again, just to make sure that any areas haven't re-tensed up. Okay. Now, it's a really cool, like I say, it's a really cool meditation. Actually, it's very cool. It's something that I often recommend to people, not as a meditation, but as a process for helping them fall asleep if they're lying in bed and they're tossing and turning, to do a body scan. Now, you know, I'm muddying the waters a little bit here because we are very close to hypnotherapy or self-hypnosis territory and just general relaxation. So, you know, if it works for you, fantastic. I happen to like it. If it doesn't, then cool, we've not lost anything. Okay, so next up, we are gonna do Thich Nhat Hanh's meditation. Okay, it's taken from a book by Thich Nhat Hanh called The Heart of Buddha's Teachings. It's a very simple mantra-like meditation. And by the way, if you wanna know what the benefits of meditation and a frugal lifestyle Google Thich Nhat Hanh. You probably won't be able to spell it, so I'll spell it for you. Thichnhat Hanh. And just take a look at the guy. He's certainly in his late 80s now, and he looks like he's in his late 60s, you know. So maybe it's just a coincidence. Who knows? Anyway, like I say, this is a really simple, but it's also a powerful meditation utilising a mantra approach, but it's a slightly lot longer mantra. I sometimes find that with short mantras, it can be difficult for me to maintain on track because it's a little bit like you're staring at a word for so long, it loses its meaning. Long mantras have that effect with me. They tend to lose their meaning after a while. So, sorry, I beg your pardon, short mantras. So a long mantra like this is really useful. So again, go through the same process, setting yourself up. And when you're ready to go, you sort of deep breathe in. And as you breathe in, you go in, out. And then the next phase is, again, you go in with your breathing, deep, slow. And then the third one is calm, ease. And the fourth, smile, and then release. And then finally, as you breathe in, present moment, and as you breathe out, wonderful moments. That's in,
out, deep, slow, calm, ease, smile, release, present moment, wonderful moment. And you go in a circle, repeating those in time with your breathing. You can even smile as you do this meditation. In fact, you can smile doing a lot of meditations. You know, when we're talking about the metta bhavana on, it's very, if you can smile as you see yourself, giving yourself love and love to you know, your enemies or whatever, that's cool. You know, regular meditators, I can nearly say it, regular meditators do a lot of smiling. I wonder why that is. And the final one I want to look at is just a normal sitting meditation. You know, sitting meditation is just that. You just sit, you close your eyes, and you observe what happens in your environment without judgment for, I don't know, 40 or 50 years or so. You know, in some ways, this is the most difficult for people and something I struggle with for quite some time, and I still do to a certain extent. Nothing like as badly as I used to, but it's definitely a tough one. I mean, guided meditation and ones where you're using a concentrated form of focus like breathing, walking, mantras, etc., help quiet your mind naturally because your mind's doing other things. Whereas with a sitting meditation, you let your mind do its own thing, basically. Now, it can be quite scary for some people when they realise that rather than letting every thought and emotion just pass by as they'd intended when they sat down, they just spent the last 5 minutes plotting revenge on the bastard who stole their parking space earlier that day. But it's okay as long as you notice that. Remember, your thoughts are not you any more than clouds are part of the sky. And that's a cool analogy to use. You know, just imagine your thoughts as clouds and let them drift gently on by without any need for intervention. After all, you don't intervene with the clouds in the sky, do you? If you do, you shouldn't be. Leave them alone. They're none of your damn business. So what we're doing with the sitting meditation is thoughts are okay, but we just don't want to be attached to them. So you have a thought, it's like, that's a thought. And then you watch it go. If you prefer, another metaphor to use would be leaves on a stream. So you've got a stream moving down, each thought you have is a leaf. You just watch it go down the stream. There's a cool Buddhist saying that encapsulates this. It's one I've recently started using regularly when things aren't going according to plan. Especially if I'm feeling stressed about something. And I know, yeah, you know, sometimes, as I said earlier on, I do get stressed sometimes. That's just part and parcel of the way I'm wired up. So I think of the feeling, or the thought, or the emotion, you could, and you say, this is not mine. This is not me. I am not this. Okay, so it's, this is not mine. This is not me. I am not this. And it's true, because my stress doesn't belong to me. Stress, like everything in life, is impermanent. All stress eventually subsides. You know, it has to. It isn't me, because if it were, when it goes, I would go with it. And obviously I'm not stress, even if occasionally my wife thinks otherwise. See, this approach allows me, and hopefully it will you, to see things in a different perspective. Realise that stress is just a fleeting emotion. It's nothing more, nothing less. It's down to me and it's down to you whether we decide to cling on to it or allow it to subside and move on. Meditation allows you to let it to move on more effectively. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not one of these types of people that thinks that all you need to do is let go. Yeah, well, maybe you do, but I understand that it's not that easy. You know, it's a process. But if you can just keep saying, this is not mine, this is not me, I am not this, it will start eventually to disassociate yourself from the stress. That makes sense. Now, that's about it for this audio book. You know, I know, as I said, that not all of these approaches will gel with you. So experiment and don't quit just because you don't love the first approach you take. Just move on to the next. You know, I've taken a light-hearted approach both to the book, the ebook, and to this audio. But I think you can tell, you know, I am not at all serious about life, but I'm very serious about what I do in trying to help people with stuff like this. And I think you can tell how serious I am about the benefits of meditation. You know, I'm not suggesting it's the cure for all ills. There isn't a cure for all ills. You know, I hear various people espousing different beliefs that this is the, you know, from NLP, I get NLP people are often think it can do anything. It can't. Neither can meditation. But it can. Meditation can be a cure for a lot of them. You know, and apart from maybe some initial discomfort, both physical and mental, you know, there aren't really any downsides to adopting a regular practice. You know, the world would be a happier, less violent, more tolerant place if we all just took the time to sit with our own feelings and emotions on a regular basis rather than trying to anaesthetize ourselves all the time. Because that's all they are. They're just feelings and emotions. They're not real. You can't grab hold of them, no matter how much we sometimes want to. Now, I wish you the best with this. So I genuinely wish you the best of luck with it. I'd welcome any positive feedback. Don't email me to tell me that I stumbled over words here and there. I know that. This, you know, I'm doing this. I've spent, you know, by the time I finish this, it's probably taken me the best part of a day to do it, even though it may not sound like it came from, you know, Nightingale Conant or whatever. But I'd be very grateful if you could forward this on, either the audio or the ebook. And, you know, hopefully we can help, I was about to say, help the world become a less stressed place. But that is a little bit... That is a bit cheesy, so we don't want to go there, do we? See, there, I just mangled some words. In the book, there's a load of resources, CDs and books and audio programs, etc. If you want to check those out, feel free. You don't need to. It would be great. If you buy anything from Amazon, I earn a few cents, as I said before. If I've covered the cost of the book, I'll be delighted, to be quite honest with you. But, you know, you can do the searching yourself by just going onto Google or onto Amazon. So thanks very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you've got something out of it. And my name's Tim Brownson. I would love to see you over at adaringadventure.com on my blog, or to sign up for my newsletter if you're not doing. I often give free ebooks away through my newsletter. Again, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. Bye.